You're listening to the Myth Cream Podcast with your hosts, Oren Ashkenazi, Mike Hernandez, and Chris Winkle. There was a castle by a waterfall with a pink and purple wall and a princess living there. She had no parents and was all alone. She got by on her own and she liked it pretty well. Cause she never wore socks. She had a pet snake. She bought a red guitar and she ate a whole cake. And there wasn't anybody there. Tell her what to do, so she did what she wanted to. Everybody knew the story of the princess who saved herself.
Today's episode is brought to you by our sponsor, Kathy Ferguson, a professor of political theory in Star Trek.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the Myth Creations Podcast. I'm Oren, and with me today is...
Chris.
And...
Mike.
Excellent. And so today we were going to take a vote on what topic to do, but instead I decided through tyrannical authority that we would be doing democracy in speculative fiction, because I am an ironic dictator.
You rule with an ironic fist.
Absolutely. It is not the strongest material, but it is my most fun.
Don't you think that democracy is a little bit mundane for this podcast? Don't we want something with more novelty?
I think that democracy is very important, Chris, because I am civic-minded. Civic-minded tyrant, I think, is what my persona is this episode. So for our purposes, democracy is a system in which a large portion of the population votes either for their, you know, for their representatives or directly on issues. Like, if it's just, like, 12 nobles in a room voting on who gets to be the king, that's not a democracy. It's like the Catholic Church isn't a democracy, even though technically the cardinals vote for who the pope is going to be. And if it's, like, only a certain percentage of the population gets to vote, like old-timey America, where you had to be a white dude who owned property, that's, like, a partial democracy. Not a good one, but it's at least has some level of it. So, Chris, you mentioned democracies were mundane, and I want to fight you on that. But first, explain what you meant by that.
Well, I think the whole idea behind speculative fiction is that there is supposed to be a lot of novelty in the setting. That the setting is supposed to not be like real life, and that's one of the things that makes it interesting and compelling. And so I think one of the reasons why specfic writers are really reluctant to put democracies in their setting is because they want more novelty. And because democracy is what we are used to, it feels too real world and too boring a lot of the time.
Okay, fair enough.
I would say that specfic writers are just not creative and imaginative then.
Well, that does raise the question of why is it like that for democracy but not humans? Because we're all humans, but most specfic stories are also about humans. Checkmate, Chris. No.
I tell you what, Oren, when you introduce me to somebody who, like, personally identifies with democracy, it's like, that's just an old Joe Schmo democracy. Like, I can totally put myself in that democracy's shoes. Then I will concede the point.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. And I think even more than it just being mundane, we are also living in an era where people love to proclaim how sick they are of politics and, like, how tired they are of elections. And to a certain extent, you know, that's because certain candidates are awful. But there's a certain degree of, like, oh, really? We have to get out and vote again? Ugh. So there's something... unfortunately romantic about imagining, like, the chosen one king just, like, saving all of us, right? Like, we have a weird complex for that.
I just don't get it.
Alright, explain it, Mike. Why don't you get it? Tell me this.
Well, first of all, Oren, you shouldn't be complaining about having to go out and vote, because we get to mail in our ballots here.
That's true. I have to put a stamp on it, though, and that irritates me.
No, you don't. But the county has to pay for it if you don't.
Yeah, they'll guilt trip me about it, and I'm double irritated.
Chris might have reason to complain. They left the glorious land of Washington for a state where you actually have to go to a polling place.
Ugh, the barbarity of it.
Yeah, but I gotta say, our polling place is really adorable.
Okay. But as I was saying before, like, about specfic authors not being creative enough, there's a lot of things that you can do with democracy that hasn't been tried before. Like, we don't assume that technology is going to never progress past its current point in our sci-fi. We don't assume that equality will never proceed past its current point in our spec fix. So why is it that we are only ever seeing forms of government? Not only, like, there are some examples out there, but for the vast majority of spec fic, it is, even with sci-fi, it's regressing to authoritarian rule, monarchs, chosen ones, empires, and it's like, how about new forms of democracy that we haven't experimented with before? Like, I don't know, we are getting close to the Internet of Things taking over everything that we do all day, every day. Why can't that lead to a society developing a direct democracy for all issues when everyone is super interconnected? What would that look like?
So I do think it's important to note that there are a lot of people who cannot imagine equality advancing past the point where it is now, and the comment section on our blog will show you that.
Well, yes, but I mean, many authors do. It's not unheard of.
So I'll tell you, I think one reason that it's not super common for us to see a lot of, like, experiments in new kinds of democracy is that, in general, those kinds of democracy would be considered more effective forms of government. Like, if, for example, we had a cyber democracy where it was actually practical for people to, using, like, you know, brain implants or whatever, to have, like, informed, considered opinions on, like, all the issues of government, and they could have, like, direct voting, that would, if it worked properly, be very efficient. And if your government is running super well and efficient, it's like, well, where's the conflict? How do I generate conflict off of that? And it's hard, Mike. It's hard. You don't have any sympathy for the specific authors out there.
Well, the government doesn't have to be the source of the conflict. The government is, it can just be part of the setting, but something that makes your world interesting and you know, makes the readers want to come back.
So you're right. You could just have democracy in the background. The Expanse does that. That's theoretically a democracy. In Eclipse Phase, the role playing game, there's this thing called the Titan Cyber Democracy, which, like, I could probably buy an expansion book and find out all about it. But then that kind of introduces its own problem, where if you, like, these are new and different kinds of governments, right? And if you go into enough detail to, like, explain what they are to someone who isn't, like, a political science major, then that raises certain expectations that they are going to be in the story and be important.
Right, but it can be in the story and be important without it being the source of conflict.
Yeah, it can. It's just hard. I'm just saying, you're added difficulty to my storytelling is what you're doing.
So what you're saying is you're lazy. I got you.
Absolutely. writing a story is really hard, and I will take any advantage I can.
One thing I would say that is a big disadvantage of storytelling democracy, besides the having the burden of explaining a new form of government, is simply that democracy is designed to eliminate one person as a primary influencer. There are some people who are more important than others, but it's designed for group input. And in a story where you have a protagonist that's supposed to make change, I feel like it can be hard for democracy to bring that out and make one person feel like they are making a huge difference. And I feel like that's why a lot of settings that do have democracies instead focus on the military, because military has a very hierarchical structure where one person's decision has huge effects.
Okay, so first, when you said eliminate one person, I was like, which person? Is it me? Am I the person being eliminated?
Yes. No, actually, I'm going to put this in the show notes, but what you're touching on is almost exactly on topic with one of CGP Grey's recent videos, The Three Rules of Rulers. So I will link that in the show notes, because eliminating people from your system of governance is one of the things, strategies for following the rules.
Right. Now, so I see what Chris is saying here, and that's part of the reason why in a lot of stories that do feature democracy, the democracy is often an obstacle, right? It's like, the Senate is blocking what our queen wants to do, right? So we gotta push that through. Then they're stupid, like, elected representatives. All they do is gum up the works. And that's certainly what Americans think now about our Congress. And I actually think that even outside of a storytelling perspective, I think right now especially, it's kind of irresponsible to make stories that just blatantly cast democracy as bad, because there are a lot of people out there who genuinely think that. And, like, for real talk, democracy is the best form of government anyone's been able to come up with yet. And it would be really tragic if we all just kind of decided we didn't want it anymore because it sometimes has problems, right? I mean, if we lived in an absolute monarchy, we would know pretty well what the problems of that government is.
Right. But I still think there's plenty of room for variation and for finding conflicts within a setting where the democratic form of government is an important enough feature to be mentioned and to be explored a little bit. Like, a really interesting example of unusual case of democracy is the city of London. Now, this is not London, but there's a much older municipality within the center of London that is the city of London, distinct from everything else that we know of as London.
Mm-hmm.
And there, it is not only residents that get to vote on things that affect the city of London, it is residents and workers who work there. So, like, for you could take that and just expand it and be like, you know, I live in this one city, but I commute to another, so I get to vote in both. And everyone does that. If you live and work in the same city, you get to vote twice. You know, and what would that do? What would that end up? What would end up happening if your world was set up with that to scale with a whole country as opposed to just a small municipality within a city?
That sounds like it would be hard on people who don't have a formal job.
Yeah, and that's one of the things you could explore in that.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting.
I mean, democracy is certainly an interesting topic if you are doing, say, a political thriller, right? There are a lot of really interesting stories you can do because that are not, like, and you can do this without democracy too, but, like, if you're doing a, you know, some kind of political story, having democracy in it requires you to actually have, like, material issues that might matter. That's one of the reasons why I actually don't really like the later seasons of, or the later episodes even, of House of Cards, because it's like, there are a bunch of people and they're basically debating nothing. Like, the issues that that the main character is trying to get past, he doesn't actually care about them, and, like, neither does anybody else. It's all, like, you know, it's all part of, you know, some kind of weird scheme that he has, and it's like, I don't really know what he's trying to accomplish. It's like, I guess he wants power for power's sake, but that's not a very compelling motivation for me.
Yeah, certainly the stakes do have to matter, and because in a democracy there's so many issues that are very kind of abstract, like, it does take extra work to make it feel like the average law matters. I feel like that's a little easier when you have characters that you care about and you're actually doing an election. I feel like Battlestar Galactica pulled that off really well, where they had actual politicians as characters, and a lot of the time the democracy wasn't necessarily up front and center. They didn't show them passing laws all the time, but they used it for drama, and it was very character-centered drama.
I'd say even in Battlestar Galactica, they use it a little bit as a punching bag, because while Rosalyn holds her own against the military, often when the rest of democracy is introduced, like the representatives from the other ships, and Rosalyn has to deal with them, then it's the same old, democracy is just a whole bunch of people bickering and not getting things done. Wouldn't it be better if the Admiral just, you know, did everything by fiat?
In the defense of Battlestar Galactica, though, the Admiral himself does give an explanation of why that's a very bad idea, right?
Oh, yes, of course.
So we do have that. Battlestar also has the advantage of, even though it's there, like, the office of the president and whatever, it's basically small-town politics because there are so few people that, like, the issues can sometimes be very personal, whereas that can be harder to do if you scale it up to, like, you know, a country or a planet.
I don't know. Some of the conflicts in House of Cards are very, very personal, and that's, you know, running the country.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's House of Cards takes it, like, kind of in a different direction, right? House of Cards is kind of democracy as a backdrop, but it's really about the journey of one person as he, like, tries to get more power, right?
Right.
I should also point out that for Battlestar, there was actually, when they decided to do the election, the big election drama, there was a central issue that had important stakes for the show, and that's whether or not they would stop and colonize a planet.
That's right.
So they had characters that you cared about that were very against each other, but they also had a central issue that they had the leader actually enact as a result.
Right. And I think it was very important, like, the reason that story was gripping was because it was about something that mattered in the story. Whereas there's a book called Republic of Thieves, and there's going to be some minor spoilers here for Republic of Thieves, the third book of the Gentleman Bastard series, where there is it also focuses on an election, but instead of focusing on any of the issues that matter in this election, it's all focused on the main characters, like, doing zany things to try to influence the vote. But it kind of, you realize as you, that, like, none of this matters. Like, nobody cares, because, like, there's really, there's never any clear differentiation made between the two political parties. They seem almost identical. And the main characters were hired to do this, so they have no stake in the game. And the people who live in the city don't super care, because the mages are just going to run everything no matter who wins. And even the people running, you realize, have been mind controlled to care by the mages. And so it's just really boring.
Well, yeah, because the authors eliminated all of the stakes. No one cares. The issues aren't important to the characters or the reader. Yeah, so no stakes worth continuing reading at that point.
Right, and the author is trying to make it work by, like, focusing on the clever tactics that the characters use to try to win votes. And I've seen this happen. I mean, this is even a little bit of what happens in House of Cards. But after a certain point, it's like, if there's no greater struggle involved, it's kind of like, you know, I don't really care that you did this clever thing and got a few more votes for your candidate, because it doesn't matter to me if your candidate wins or not.
So I keep throwing out ideas of things that I want to see, because I'm tired of you lazy writers. Give me the stories I want. No, actually, I should just write them myself if I want them so badly. But
Mike, for your birthday, I will write you a story about democracy.
Woo!
I don't know when your birthday is, and I don't know if it'll be good, but I will write it for you.
Okay. I will hold you to that. I won't tell you when my birthday is, but I'll hold you to it.
It's okay. Facebook will tell me.
Darn it.
You'll have, like, one day to write the story. Like,
oh, darn it.
A whole week if he checks his events calendar. So, another thing that I would find interesting, and I've seen a few examples here and there, is a fantasy setting or, like, a historical setting that takes on groups that are just starting to experiment with democracy. So, like, we have lots of medieval fantasy and lots of fantasy on the Dark Ages and stuff like that, but when it comes to, like, people just trying to establish a democracy, we don't have anything that we don't have any where they're coming out of a monarchy or coming out of feudalism. The only spec fic that does that is usually rebuilding democracy after in a post-apocalyptic setting. So after everything's fallen apart, taking what we used to have and either trying to put it back together as it was, as close as possible, or coming up with something new, but still has the path dependency of the democracy that existed prior.
That's a good point. In post-apocalyptic settings, democracy actually is framed as valuable because people lose it and have bad effects. That's one of the few genres of spec fic that really displays democracy that way.
Yeah, I agree. And I would also be interested in, like, a story where, like, democracy is first emerging. I was actually really hoping that Discworld would do a story about that, because, like, there are so many other really complex issues, and a lot of them are, you know, civil rights and social justice related in Discworld. But for, like, all of Discworld, like, Ankh-Morpork is ruled by one guy, and there's even the running joke of the Lord Vetinari believes in one man, one vote. He's the man, he's got the vote, right? and, like, I love Lord Vetinari. He's a great character, and one of the reasons he's a great character is because he actually makes mistakes sometimes. But at the same time, like, that would have been something that I really would have liked to see in Discworld, because I think Terry Pratchett would have done it very, very well. Unfortunately, that will never be the case.
Sadness.
Can I tell you one of his future books?
Oh, Mike.
Oh.
Can I tell you guys about a kind of story that I would like to see, but is, like, kind of unredeemably tainted now by the Star Wars prequels?
Yeah, let's see it.
Ooh, yes.
Let's hear it.
Okay. Okay, so I have a soft spot for stories about defending democracy from tyranny. Like, I think that that is a valuable story, and I think we could use that now more than ever. But thanks to the Star Wars prequels, that story is just inherently silly now, because it was like George Lucas did it and, like, doesn't understand anything about democracy or, I think, storytelling. He has, like, queens being elected and serving terms. And it's like, you know, whenever we see the Senate, it's just boring. There's nothing interesting going on there. But, like, I'm fascinated with the ways that democracies fall, right? Like, with the ways that they fall apart, and the way people can, like, twist them into seeming like a bad idea, and the steps that other people take to try to counter it. I find that a fascinating story, and I'd like to see more of that. I might write some, now that I talk about it. It kind of sounds interesting.
Yeah, you should try that.
Yeah.
You could also read, since we're talking about Star Wars, the Yuuzhan Vong arc of the Star Wars novels, all 30 books, has within there the New Republic falls and then gets replaced with the Galactic Alliance.
That would require me reading the Yuuzhan Vong, so I think I'm going to have to pass. I'm going to have to pass on that.
Yeah, I would recommend it. Recommend passing on it. It's long, and only a few of them are quality, but don't make sense without the others. Actually,
yeah, for sure.
The arc that comes right after that, where Jacen Solo, no longer canon, tries to take over the Galactic Alliance, is a tale about defending democracy from someone who would just take over all power for himself.
Yeah, he becomes a bad guy.
But the thing is, he fails by the end of that series.
Well, that's good. He was not a great character, in my opinion, or at least not what I read of him.
He was a really interesting character in that series, but he had changed a lot by then, mostly via torture.
Oh.
He spends about half of the Yuuzhan Vong War being tortured by the Yuuzhan Vong.
Oh, good for him. So, another thing that is that democracy in storytelling is very useful for is actually role-playing games. I know we've been talking a lot about prose, but if you want to do a political story, democracy offers you a lot of options with role-playing, because it, like, very often you might not know at the beginning if you want to do a political story, and so if you don't, like, have your characters, like, be members of a royal house in, like, a feudal setting, it's going to be kind of hard for them to take leadership positions. But if you run, like, a political campaign to try to get into office, that requires a lot of investment in the setting, and if you have run enough sessions that your players actually care what's going on in your setting, then that can be very rewarding to them, because, like, all of their hard work learning about, like, the, you know, the dragon farming problems in one of their provinces, like, now it kind of pays off, right? And so that can be, that at least in my experience, that has been an interesting reward for people who get really into your setting.
Yeah, that certainly is a way to make the setting pay off and make people get more invested in it, for sure.
And I mean, I think in general, like, just some best practice advice would probably be, it's usually a good idea to try to represent factions, and this is always true, but especially if you're going to be doing something as big and complicated as a democracy, it's good to represent factions with a single character, right? So instead of, like, having just a faceless group of, like, these are the Free Earth Party, right? You have, like, one person who, like, represents them and kind of... And that, you know, that is a bit of an oversimplification, but it's useful to do that, because then you don't have the problem of it just being this immeasurably complicated thing that no one can grasp, right?
Yeah, it sounds like one of the keys to depicting democracy well in any story and trying to bring it to life is boiling it down to compelling characters.
Yeah, I mean, and that could be the key to most storytelling, really.
Yeah. Well, I think with some other conflicts, like, I think that the kind of conflicts that happen within a democracy inherently have a little bit less, like, thrill to them than some other conflicts do. Like,
yeah.
As much as, you know, two people taking swords and whacking at each other doesn't, like, necessarily make for a great conflict if it doesn't have great setup, but I feel like there's at least a little bit more novelty to that than two people who are arguing with each other in front of a crowd, you know, in front of a, you know, council or what have you.
You could always do a late Roman Republic style democracy in which two people arguing in front of a crowd very often led to two people whacking each other with swords.
Or early American democracy.
Yeah. I guess really in Rome it was more often clubs, because, like, the politicians weren't supposed to carry swords. That was considered gauche. So they just had, like, heavy walking sticks, and they just beat each other to death. That was fun.
I think you should just have fist fights break out among Congress all the time.
Yes, absolutely.
Canings. Canings for everyone.
Yeah.
So, with Battlestar Galactica being a big exception, one thing that we don't see a lot of within specfic and sci-fi is the military being deferential to civilian rule. And that's something we get in a lot of stories with contemporary settings, but not something that we get in, as much in specfic, because, you know, it's, you want to go for the, you know, the important hierarchy where one person can make choices that get things done. And so they, you know, buck against the civilian rule. Even in Star Trek, where Starfleet is not technically supposed to be a military, even though it's totally a military.
It is absolutely a military.
Yes, it's absolutely a military, but they're not a warship, they're a ship of exploration.
Yeah, never mind the torpedoes.
Even Picard bucks the chain of command to get things done when he feels like he knows better. Whereas it's you see a lot more that ideal of civilian rule of the military in things that are set in, like, contemporary America or contemporary Earth.
There is a Deep Space Nine episode that addresses that, actually. I would recommend the episode Homefront. It's a two-parter. It's an episode where Starfleet, or at least a faction of Starfleet, like, tries to grab power to, like, protect Earth from the, you know, from the threat of the changelings. And, you know, Sisko's got to stop it, because, like, hey, nobody voted for you, Admiral Layton. You don't get to be in charge. So that's an excellent episode. But I agree. In general, we tend to see a certain glorification of people with guns taking the law into their own hands in fiction.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, it's exciting, right? Like, it is exciting when people do that. So it's not unreasonable that a lot of authors would go that way. I do hope that if they, you know, if we get more educated, we'll see less of that.
Speaking of which, we should talk about Avengers a little bit.
Oh, should we?
Talking about... you're I see you're very reluctant.
Okay.
Well, there's a whole issue.
Chris, why don't you talk about Avengers?
Yeah, you seem to actually want to talk about Avengers.
Mm-hmm. Well, just talking about democracy being portrayed as a stick in the mud that keeps things from getting done. The latest Avengers movie was very bad that way. There was a whole, like, there was a huge, enormous effort that was done in the UN to come up with, like, a mass agreement about what the Avengers should do or not do. And the lesson of the movie was that you should be above the law and just do what you want.
Yeah. Captain America in the MCU unfortunately comes across as, politically speaking, a bit of a fascist. Like,
yeah, which is really ironic considering his backstory.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And again, it ultimately just presents, like, following actual laws that people who are legit representatives have gotten together to pass and agree on between each other is just too much for somebody to put up with. And that if we follow the laws that, you know, that are democratically made, then the world will be destroyed because we can't we can't work with that
because we just, like, can't go fast enough, right? I mean, what's funny about that is, like, what would have happened if they'd agreed to it and then, like, oh, there's a giant asteroid that's coming towards Earth or whatever, and it shoots lasers, you know, and the Avengers are like, we should go stop that, and someone from the UN, instead of saying yes, please go stop that, they were like, hang on, we have to have, like, 50 committee meetings about this. What would have happened if they had just gone and stopped it anyway? I'll tell you, nothing. Because they're the Avengers. They're kind of above the law. Like, Iron Man was basically fighting for them to all agree to follow the law when it's convenient for them. That was really Iron Man's stance. Because you really think Iron Man was going to, like, not go stop a supervillain if the UM told him not to? Of course it was. So, like, that the whole fight was pointless.
Yeah. Well, and even in the scope of the movie, like, the reason they have to go now and they can't wait for the misunderstandings to be sorted out and for them to explain that Bucky was brainwashed and, you know, he's actually okay now is because they thought all of the other Winter Soldiers were going to be activated if they didn't get to Siberia and stop it. And they get there and they've all been put down. So, like, had Team Iron Man won the airport fight, nothing bad would have happened.
It all would have been fine. All right.
Yeah, the only thing that would have happened was that crazy guy, crazy ex-Special Forces guy that was trying to manipulate them all would have just been sitting in Siberia for a few weeks before getting bored and realizing they're not showing up.
Sitting there by himself, eating his yep. boxed mac and cheese.
Staring at the dead, frozen bodies.
The world's most perfunctory villain, if ever there was one. Okay, so I think we're about out of time, and we would normally take a vote. To end the podcast, but instead I am tyrannically declaring the podcast is done, and if anything...
You're not tyrannically declaring a vote to end the podcast?
I'm calling for a vote of no confidence on our co-host, Oren.
Ooh, uh-oh. All right, guys, I'm having some political upheaval at home, so I'm gonna have to go deal with that. If anything that we said piqued your interest and you have a question for us, please email us at podcast@mythgreens.com. Otherwise, we will see you in a few weeks. There was a dragon with a pointy tail. The princess when he came around tried to burn the castle down, but she caught him by his tail. Then she tied him to a tree so the dragon couldn't fly. She told him he was mean and it made the dragon cry. When he finally apologized, she offered him some tea. He accepted it graciously. Now he visits every weekend with the princess who saved herself.
This has been the MythGreant Podcast. Opening closing theme, The Princess Who Saved Herself, by Jonathan Coulton.